There, everyone in podcast land, welcome back to the Front Row Network, the podcast where people actually like movies, and another episode here. A full disclosure: during Monster Cast month here in October 2020, the time of year when we celebrate all things creepy and crawly at the Front Row Network, and a very special episode of Full Disclosure here today because horror mega studio Blumhouse has decided to release four original films in October under the banner of Welcome to the Blumhouse. And they released the first two films on Amazon Prime just a couple of days ago, and so we are going to do a quick little full disclosure mini review of both of these movies here. I'm Jeremy Geckner, the editor-in-chief, here with me as always in the month of October for MonsterCast, my wife Sarah Baltus Fitch Geckner. Say hello to everyone.
Hello to everyone.
That was pretty good. That was a pretty good mimicking there. I don't know, maybe we should have done our best like infuriating Joey King impressions for the one of these.
I don't think I can do one of those.
Oh man. We're going to be breaking down the first two movies in the Welcome to Blumhouse series here. The first one called The Lie and the second one called Black Box. So we're going to be doing both of those. We're not going to get into as much detail as we typically do on a full disclosure because we're doing two of them and because, you know, this is an extra episode of full disclosure. So we're going to be pretty brief here. Plus, we don't want to give away too many things. We're going to give away, obviously, big plot points because it's full disclosure. But that's how we're going to be doing this here. So, you know, Sarah, when I told you about Welcome to Blumhouse, I think you didn't quite understand exactly what it was, but overall,
well, who does?
Yeah, exactly. But overall, I think after we watch these two movies, man, I'm really excited to see where they're going to go with the next two movies.
Yeah, they're definitely worth watching. Now, I would not call them horror movies.
That's... No, I mean, there's horrific elements involved in this.
I don't know that I deserve horrific.
I mean, there's murder. There's the idea of covering up murder. There's There's creepy mind creatures.
Sci-fi thriller.
Like, definitely Black Box is more in the mold of Black Mirror, the TV series. Yeah. But and The Lie, you're right. I wouldn't call it a horror film per se. But Jason Blum, actually, the owner and head producer of Blumhouse, actually said that all four films in the series are based on, like, the horrors of family. Yeah. And, you know, how family can be horrific and stuff. So you're right, it's not
all,
your typical
made
horror film.
This year, like, The Lie is from 2018.
Right.
So they were just released in this grouping, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's it. But that's the common theme between these four movies, and you can definitely see it in both of them, first of all. But as we said, we're going to go with we're going to break down The Lie first, because that's the first one we watched here. So this one stars Joey King, Muriel Enos, and Peter Sarsgaard, and they are this family unit. But at the very beginning, we get this montage of the life of Joey King and with her parents together. But right off the bat, when we start the action of the actual movie, we see that the parents are actually divorced, and that Joey King is having a hard time with this. We should probably start using real names too. She plays Kayla. Her dad is Jay and her mom is Rebecca. Mm-hmm. But we get the sense that she's a dancer of some kind, that she's having some kind of dance retreat.
It's ballet.
Yeah, ballet.
She has point shoe pictures all over her room.
Oh, well, then there you go. So Sarah.
Ballet retreat. They say it like five times. Pay attention. But I mean, it seems that they've been separated for some time, divorced for some time, because the mom has a boyfriend who's moving in with them.
Yeah, and Jay actually has he's in a band, and he's dating one of the members of the band who's much younger. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that Kayla does not like this, right. As I'm sure most kids don't.
Sure, but I mean, it's it's not like it just happened, and it's also not like she's five.
Yeah, exactly.
She kind of acts five.
We also get the sense that Rebecca is very tightly wound.
she's bad cop.
Yeah, she's definitely the bad cop. Jay is definitely 100% good cop here.
Kind of like us.
Hey, there you go. But Rebecca is dropping Kayla off with Jay so that he can take her to this retreat.
Gresham retreat.
Yes, this Gresham retreat because she has to work. So as they are driving up to this retreat.
In a very snowy, deserted road.
With
one bus stop.
One random
randomly
bus stop.
In the middle of the snow-covered wasteland.
But she, but they come upon this bus stop, and Kayla's friend, who I'm
Brittany,
is sitting there on the bus stop, and she's like, tells Dad,
she's like,
no,
Dad,
hey,
you have to stop.
You gotta stop here. And so they pick up Brittany, and what ensues is just a very uncomfortable mini car ride
where Brittany like tries to like awkwardly
hit on. She
kind of
hits on Jay, and very, very strangely, and then
like asks him to pull over to take a pee in the snow covered hell.
Yeah, why not?
So he does, and then they like.
Yeah, but he lets Kayla and Brittany go off on their own.
Well, yeah,
to pee.
He's not going to go watch teenage girls take a pee in the snow. That's
right.
Awkward.
That's a little creepy.
But when they stomp off, like Kayla looks like she's like pissed at Brittany. Like it's just an awkward.
Yeah,
thing.
It's just a very awkward situation there. But enough time passes that Jay is getting very weirded out here. So he starts going to look for him.
And he hears a blood curdling scream.
And he hears a blood curdling scream and starts running. And he finds this bridge over rapids basically. And he sees. Kayla's like sitting on the edge of this rail that's part of this bridge. So he goes, he pulls her off, but Brittany is nowhere to be found. And so he, I think she fell. Yeah, something like that. She said she fell
or
something.
She's gone.
She said she's gone. And so, Jay runs down to the river. He's trying to look for her. I think he finds her purse is alongside the shore there, but she is nowhere to be found. So he is running back to the car with Kayla. He says he needs to call 911, but then she says the fateful words,
I pushed her.
And so now a whole new game is afoot.
Hey.
They avoid a car coming
at
them.
Passing truck, they duck.
And then Jay basically goes to Rebecca trying to tell her she's pulling like quite a big, like, you're so irresponsible shtick on him.
Yeah.
And eventually, though, when they get back home, Kayla does tell Rebecca. And then just this entire game of Rebecca and Jay having to try and find a way to cover for their daughter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they tell their mom that, she pushed her, but they, for a long time, like, think it was an accident that she pushed her.
Right.
They keep talking about like how it was an accident, and then finally, like after a day, like Kayla kind of just like loses her shit, and she's like, "I did it on purpose. Mm-hmm. I wanted to push her," and it's like, "Oh shit."
Yeah. And so I'll tell you this much. So like most of the action of the rest of the film is like Jay and Rebecca trying to figure out how they can get
around. It's more like
this.
A familial dynamic at this point.
Yeah.
Like seeing the inner workings of how they're going to work together, even though they're separated, and
because the other big
how
action,
far they would go to.
Yeah, because the other big action of the film is that Brittany's dad actually, shows up at the house trying to find her. It turns out Brittany's like run away a few times.
He assumes that Kayla's with her, that they just didn't show up for the retreat together.
Exactly. And so they make up this excuse that she's sick and that she never went.
They're just really bad
liars.
Really
bad liars.
Really bad.
Which we'll get into in a little bit. But because he continues to try and find out where Brittany is, this means that Jay and Rebecca have to keep coming up with more and more elaborate lies. And it eventually starts unraveling. Sarah, I think the crux of this whole film is, you're right, what you said, that family dynamic here. And I guess the main theme of here of like, how far would you go to protect your family?
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think that Enos Sarsgaard and especially King, all of them play their parts very, very well here, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a very small cast and those three are like 90% of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have that dynamic of... the hardened mom who finally starts coming apart, but then you have the lax dad who starts getting more,
very detail oriented.
Yeah. And then, the teenage daughter who's supposed to be an adult who's supposed to be on the precipice of adulthood, turning back to her childlike
and just not taking
behavior.
It seriously at all.
Yeah.
Acting like nothing has happened.
That's kind of how each of them react to the situation.
Yeah, actually, that's a very good summary there.
Thank you.
You should review movies or something. And I mean, like, there's just this big, like, the stakes just keep growing bigger and bigger and bigger. They eventually try to, like, frame Brittany's dad for child abuse.
The mom, Rebecca, used to be a cop, so she goes to an old cop friend of hers.
Yeah, and they try to basically just like set this guy
say
up
that she had a that Brittany had a bruise on her face and that they're fighting all the time and that they're trying to basically make it like he beat her up and
ran away or he did something
to
her.
You should go look at this guy
just trying to throw the suspicion off of there. But this is the other dynamic here is that through their collective purpose of protecting Kayla, Rebecca and Jake sort of start to rediscover their love for each other a little bit, which is just very twisted.
Love for each other other, or maybe just respect for each other, I think. Yeah, I would say.
Or it's finding common purpose.
Right.
Too.
I don't feel like it's romantic, but it's like, you know, I feel like their divorce was kind of ugly, it seems like.
It seems.
But it seems, you know, like through this that like they are remembering some of the things that they... what drew them to each other, why they care about each other, why they're good parents to Kayla together. Mm-hmm. I think it just kind of renews their respect for each other.
Yeah, but I mean, this is fateful because Kayla sees it. And so she thinks that, you know, what's happening here, what the situation she set in motion is going to make them a family again and is going to make her happy again. And
her
all
behavior through all of this is like really, really weird and annoying.
Yeah, I mean, like there's a moment where Rebecca's trying to get her to call Brittany's dad so that, you know, she could say that she's sick and that she didn't go. She doesn't know where she is, and she just literally will not do it.
She's like, no.
Yeah, and it's
and she's like watching
so
cartoons
bratty
on the couch like such a baby. Uh-huh. All she does this whole movie is like ask for pancakes for something to eat.
That's very true.
And she just literally like the next morning after it happened, like the two parents are just like distraught, sitting there like pulling their hair out, like terrified. And she's just like, can we make eggs with pepper jack and peppers and cheese?
Like,
and
do you know what? Like
I'm sorry,
you have
but
no sense
the morning
of what
after I murdered someone, I wouldn't just be like, ah, it's a beautiful day. What's
what
for breakfast? Let's go to the
here.
Waffle House.
Yeah, so I mean, like,
it's very much like, I don't know if anybody ever watched The Act on Hulu, but Joey King has that role as that kind of like childlike teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's very similar.
Very similar there. So, look, okay, we're going to give you your spoiler warning here because we have to talk about the big twist of this movie.
Yeah. So basically, you know, it comes to a point where like their lies are exposed, they're going to be busted.
Yeah, and so then they try to frame the dad by burying Brittany's phone.
Well, yeah, they find
purse thing. So yeah, the cops trace the phone back to downtown,
Jay's
which
apartment.
Is where Jay's apartment.
So they try
is.
To bury the phone in her dad's yard. So that they think the phone is at home.
Right.
But they get caught.
Yeah, so Brittany's dad is out there trying to confront Rebecca about this. You know, this leads to Jay almost drowning him.
Yeah. Then they leave him, and they get in the car, and they go to leave, and then...
Well, it's because he says to them, after Jay does it, ultimately pulls him up from this water, he says, you know, like, I know it was Kayla, like, I know...
Yeah, basically the jig is up.
Yeah. So as they're driving away, they see her dad, Brittany's dad, go back into the street there, and Rebecca just runs him down with the car, which is just very jolting.
And uncharacteristic of her. And it's like, because she's a former cop and she's an attorney, and it's like, wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, the next morning there's this great sequence where they're cleaning the blood off of the front of the car.
And they're just like not speaking.
I know, it's all catatonic pretty
much,
man. Yeah,
totally catatonic. They like lay next to each other on the couch like it's our last night together.
Exactly.
And yeah.
But as they're finishing up this cleaning here, and a fantastic shot does it. You just see, like, as Jay is out by the car in the background, in the foreground, Rebecca is, like, kind of drying
rinsing
off this blood
yeah.
in the sink. And all of a sudden, you just see this coat with some fur.
It's bright pink.
Into the frame.
It's this color that,
it's the exact
very...
same coat that Brittany was wearing when they picked her up. And lo and behold, Sarah... it's Brittany right in front of them.
She just is standing there, and she's like, hey, is Kayla here?
Yeah, like, nothing is happening. The two of them, Rebecca and Jay, like, Sarsgaard and Nenna's here, they're literally just like...
What?
And so Brittany comes clean that, you know, Kayla helped her, like, run away so that she could be with her boyfriend for a little bit because her dad doesn't approve.
What kind of plan is that?
Yes. And also, why the hell did you say you killed her then?
Why would Kayla go... we find out why.
But, yes, we do find out why. But yes.
Before that, like, why not just be like, yeah, she ran away?
Yeah.
Why would you not... Why would you say you killed her?
And so... And I mean, so basically, like, Brittany asks, you know, if her father is like knows and where he is.
Yeah,
and
how much trouble am I in?
And she starts noticing all the blood, and so, like, you know, there's this really tense moment where Rebecca's just like, stop, and just like
tells her to go home.
Yeah, well, she like touches her face, just like, are you really here type thing, and tells her to go home, and it's like, oh god, man. And so yes, we go back inside, and Kayla, and they're just like staring at her.
They're just like in literal
disbelief, just total like shell shock here. And she literally is just like, okay, okay, don't be mad. Like, don't be mad. Oh, man.
You literally have no idea what just happened.
I know. And so she tells him, basically the reasoning here is that even though it wasn't true that she killed her, she saw that them protecting her brought them back together.
She was going to tell them, but when she heard them laughing together in the bathroom, she just couldn't tell them.
Right.
Because it was bringing the family together.
And so thus directly leading to the death of Brittany's dad.
Directly thinking she's bringing the family together leads directly to the family being
apart
forever.
That's the poignancy of the ending here, is that they're all hugging and she keeps saying, like, please don't leave me, please don't leave me.
As the we hear sirens pulling up
to the house, like, well, you just orphaned yourself, kids, so congratulations.
Good job.
Look, actually, just a really effective drama here. Wonderful performances from Sarsgaard and Ennis. Joey King is fine. She's clearly an emerging talent. You're right. Like, I think there's better things that she's done. I think she's much better in the act, but very good at playing up, you're right, like that childish,
it's very evident that, like, because, like, Brittany and Kayla are the same age, and it's very evident that Brittany is, like, far more mature.
Right.
Like, she's into boys, and, like, Kayla says lots of times, like, none of the boys look at me. She's just, like, really immature for her age, and she just doesn't have a lot of friends, and she's just kind of, like, I don't know. She's just really sheltered, and she's just very naive.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. And so, just a very, very effective movie, though. Like I said, not really horror, but there is horrific elements that are in
it. It's just, like, so cringeworthy. It's like, oh, God, no.
Oh, my God, no. When you get to the ending, I mean, it's just, I hope that it was the same for you, listener, because we were just like, oh, God.
We kind of thought, maybe.
Yeah, I had an inkling, but, like, I didn't think that was actually going to happen, but jeez, lo and behold, they did. So just well done, everybody on the cast and crew of that one.
Yeah.
There. So
yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to the other film that we reviewed for the Welcome to Blumhouse series, which was Black Box. And this one, you're right, Sarah. This one definitely follows like a lot more of a Black Mirror type vibe, because this one definitely is about kind of dangerous technology and how that can lead to horrific results and consequences.
Yeah, it's very Black Mirror.
Yeah. Great cast here, though, led by Mamoudou Atti, who plays Nolan. Felicia Rashad of Cosby Show fame, playing Lillian. And then just a bunch of others. This one, it actually tells the story of a man who he's lost his wife in a traffic accident of some kind. And not only that, but he was also, like, in a coma and brain dead for a while.
3 days.
And so now he has, like, he cannot remember most of his memories.
He's kind of like Drew Barrymore in 50 First Dates.
A little bit. And a little bit like
at the
Guy Pearce in Memento.
Yeah, where they have to, like, play tapes for him every morning so he knows who he is. Like,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like,
and he's got,
and he has, like the cutest daughter of all time.
Yeah, the actor there, Amanda Christine, who plays Ava, she is wonderful in this. This is a star-making tour for her. Really, really cute, but really assertive as an actress, too.
Yeah.
Really great there. But, like, so this guy, Nolan, he's a foreign photographer for a newspaper, but since the accident, you know, they say that, like, he's just kind of lost
his
talents and stuff. They're just not as good as they
were.
Doesn't
have the eye.
And so he keeps getting these, as he's trying to continue remembering stuff about his life and about his wife, his friend Gary, who's a doctor, is always trying to talk him through it and help him remember things, because they've been friends for forever, and
because, like,
him.
He's sort of in danger of losing his daughter.
Yeah,
because, like,
bit.
He forgets, like, things about, like, picking her up and just, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's honestly, like, I was thinking it, like, when we were watching, I was like, is it safe for him to have
that's
her
a good
alone?
Question that's a good question.
I mean, she kind of runs the house, which is cute and all, but she's like 7 years old, and it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
I mean, he obviously is, like, very doting on her, and he loves her, and but it's like, he's not all there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
And so, because he's not all there, he keeps getting these emails from a doctor,
Brooks,
who tells him, you know, like, that she can help him, that she's got this treatment that can really help him redevelop his memories back.
It's like a new, innovative treatment.
Yeah, and so eventually he goes to see her after, yes, the newspaper denies him that. He forgets to pick up his daughter, and,
again,
you know, they're threatening to call child services on him. And so he ultimately decides to go there. And what she explains to him is that what she does is some kind of hypnosis technology hybrid.
Kind of looks like, it's like a thing goes on his head. It looks like a VR goggle situation.
Yeah, but I mean, we've got to say, it looks a lot like the sunken place from Get Out.
Oh, yeah, the place that he goes. The actual machine looks like VR goggles.
Really tricked out VR goggles. She tells him, like, you know, this is a thing where we will put you into the memories that you have lost, because they're still in there. They're flashing before you, but you just can't make sense of them. So what we do is we have a virtual reality simulator that, like, makes these memories, turns them there, and, you know, this program puts you right there in it so that you can try to make sense of these memories and then thus retain them. And so she tells him, you know, like, this is something that takes a couple weeks. He says, I don't have that long. So she's like, okay, well, we're just going to push through this.
We'll just, like, do, like, really immersive. Yeah. Uh-huh. So basically, like, it starts off, like, you pick a safe room. So he picks, like, Ava's room. Uh-huh. And then you start out in the safe room, and there's, like, a door. You can't go out the door. You have to stay in the safe room. And then inside the safe room, there's an analog watch. And the watch is what you use to move from memory to memory by turning the dial forward or back.
Forward or back. And if you want to get out of a memory at any time, you push the crown of the watch in.
Right.
And that will get you back out into your safe room. And so, you know, right away, this is just really cool stuff, how they visualize this. You know, he first memory he sees is him at his wedding. Mm-hmm. But when he opens up the veil of the bride, he sees that the woman has no face, and that everybody in the audience has no face. And not only that, but then he starts seeing this weird bone cracking noise making creature that is crawling on the ground him. Yeah, and it's I told you when we watched it, I was like, that was some Doug Jones stuff right there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's really creepy.
And it, you know, keeps coming towards him, and so it kind of freaks him out, which causes him to push the button to get out of the memory.
Yeah, and so, but once he's out there, though, Lillian actually, Dr. Brooks says to him, you know, like, nobody's ever seen, like, faces or people that quickly before. Like, you know, you have to keep at this. You have to,
A lot of progress, but, you know, the more you do it, then the faces will eventually come into view.
Yeah.
And she, like, kind of tells him about they talk about the creature that he keeps seeing, and she keeps telling him, like, you know, that he can fight it off. It's his mind. I run my mind. It doesn't run me.
Yeah, so there's ways that he can combat against this creature that is in his mind.
Basically,
this keeps going back and forth.
Yeah, he gets,
like,
several
this.
Sessions. And meanwhile, his friend is kind of, like, researching, like, what happened to him, like, on the night that he came in from the crash.
Yeah, because he got in this crash, and, I mean, like, he was brain dead. Like, everything was gone and such. But then he learns that Dr. Brooks actually took him into her lab for an undisclosed amount of time.
Yeah, it says that, he was, like, completely unresponsively brain dead.
Yeah, but she takes him into her lab, and then lo and behold, he wakes up.
3 days later. He's very interested as to how this happened. But anyways, like, Nolan has several sessions. Like, the second time he finds himself in, like, an apartment, and he, like, gets up, and he thinks it's Ava as a baby, and he sees his wife in the kitchen, but it's all kind of, like, creepy looking, and the wife is very, like, withdrawn from him, and it just seems, you know, and he keeps saying, like, you know, we never lived in an apartment, we've always lived in this house. And earlier they show, like, after the wedding memory, they go through pictures of his own wedding showing that it was an outdoor wedding, it wasn't even in a church. So these memories are not making a whole lot of sense. But eventually, like, by the third time he goes in, I think he goes back to the apartment.
Right.
But then he starts to see faces. The faces start to come to light. But the creature keeps after him, and the creature, like, chokes him and stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, like, really, really creepy here. You know, and this keeps happening over and over and over again. But, you know, and I mean, when did you really start to get a sense of, like, there's something not quite right here? Like, you know, like, this, I'm not quite trusting Dr. Brooks here. Like, you know, there's something
hinky. Second memory after he was like, you know, we never lived in the apartment, blah, blah, blah. I think I was like, I don't think these are his memories.
Yeah.
I said.
And I got to call out the actor here, Mamoru Ati, again, because there's just this, you just really get this sense of longing here about, like, wanting to know who he is, because he keeps asking Gary, like, all the time, like, you know,
did,
like,
did we ever fight?
Yeah, like, did we ever fight? Like, maybe I cheated on her and stuff. And it's just, like, so, you know, and Gary is just so great. Like, that actor, too, I can't remember his name.
Tosin.
Oh. Yeah, go for it.
Morohun Fola.
Gary, he is great in this, because every single time Nolan has, like, these doubts, and he has this lingering, like, question about whether or not he was a good spouse and a good husband and father, you know, he is totally resolute. He's just like, no, you guys loved each other. You would do anything for her. You would never hurt her and stuff.
So, like, eventually, once he sees the faces, we see that we've seen pictures of his wife.
Right.
We see that this woman is not his wife.
Yeah.
So we know at this point that these aren't his memories, and that's when we kind of find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Because he goes back to his safe room.
Yeah.
And then he kind of, like, things start coming into view, and he sees himself
again,
in a reflection.
Again, yeah. Full spoiler warning right here.
He looks into, like, a window in the room, and it's not Nolan's face that he sees.
Yeah, it's somebody else's face. What?
So we find out that it's actually the son of Dr. Brooks, Thomas,
mm-hmm.
who had died in an accident 2 years previous, falling quote unquote, down a flight of stairs.
He was also brain dead and stuff, but
he actually
downloaded his EEG. Yeah, EEG into some kind of data form.
Some kind of San Junipero shit.
And when she actually brought Nolan into her lab that night, and then he woke up, what she did was upload Thomas's consciousness into his
Nolan.
I guess empty vessel.
So basically it's been Thomas the whole time.
It's been Thomas, but
he doesn't
quite
know
remember what it is. This is why, and this is genius, because it like Proto explains everything that we've seen so far, like why he can't quite remember the handshake with his daughter,
why he couldn't take pictures anymore,
his pictures weren't good anymore, why he couldn't quite remember everybody that he worked for that were his friends and everything,
because he's not himself,
because it's not him. And so eventually Thomas, you know, gets fully emerged and awaken into the real world. And so while we're seeing the actor who plays Nolan, and we think we're seeing Nolan, we're actually seeing Thomas
inside of
Nolan's body here.
Which leads to the absolutely most heartbreaking part of the episode.
Oh my God, yeah. And so here's the other thing, though, is like, you know, through these memories, you know, we see that maybe the marriage between Thomas and his wife was not that great. The predominant memory is her standing in the kitchen with bruises all over her body. You know, and it's just so Thomas, we already get the sense, is not a very good person. And even Lillian says to him, you know, like,
you have a second chance.
You know, you have a second chance to do right
by your wife
and your kid.
Yeah.
You know, so we get the sense that Thomas has had some wife beating tendencies.
Right. So this causes Nolan, Thomas as Nolan, to have to abandon Ava, Nolan's daughter.
Yeah, Gary, which, again, just a totally heartbreaking scene there, where, like, even Thomas says when he fully emerges, he's just like, okay, what about Ava?
And she's not your daughter.
Yeah, Dr. Brooks is like, she's not your daughter and stuff. And so, just, yeah, he's driving her to Gary's, but he's being so cold to her, because, again,
so
now
sad.
There's no doubt.
Because she's so cute. She's like, he picks her from school, and she just, like, wants, she's like, we're going to cook tonight. We need to go to the store and get this, and he just, like, won't have any of it. And it's so,
she's like, I got to drop you off of Gary for a few days, and they're packing, and, you know, she's like packing so slowly. So I thought he said it would just be a couple days, but he's making her pack a bunch of clothes. And then when they finally do get to Gary's house, though, she has this habit of, like, writing phrases on his hand and
to remember things. Yeah,
to remember things. And so she writes something on his hand. Gary tries to talk him out of it, but he's just not having it because he's not Nolan anymore.
Yeah.
And so as he's driving away, after telling Gary off, he looks on the hand, and what Ava wrote on there was, don't forget me.
Which is,
it's just killing me right now, because it's just like,
she's so sweet. It's like, damn it. So anyways, to make a long story short, he tries to go and be Thomas and find his way back into a life with his wife and daughter. He lies about being a friend from college of her husband, and then he eventually
convince her.
Tells her the truth about who he is, and because she knows about his mother's experiments.
Yeah, and he says things that only Thomas would know and
right.
stuff. But and it looks like, you know, he's going to be trying to reconcile here.
And then he notices that all the pictures on the wall in the house have removed him. It's just mom and daughter, his chair, his books, all the things that were his in the apartment are kind of just erased.
And so this just sets him off, and we fully see the real Thomas emerge here. He is, you know, pinning his wife up against the wall. He's talking about how, you know, they're not going to do this to him. He's here. He's not leaving. Busts into his daughter's room.
So it's then that we find out that he did not fall down the stairs.
She pushed him after he was injuring her and their daughter.
Right.
So again, Thomas, you suck.
And then so the other reveal that we find out is that the creature that we had seen throughout of quote unquote Nolan's journeys through the black box is actually Nolan.
Nolan's consciousness, which is still somehow intact.
But it's garbled. That's why it's so messed up. But it's trying to come to the surface and, you know, fight its way back.
Yeah, and so eventually as Thomas is getting violent in the house, his wife hits him over the head, and he ends up back at Gary's house with Kayla trying to... back in the lie. Ava trying to, you know, like jolt him out of this. And so he's really freaked out by this. He runs away again and goes back to Dr. Brooks. And, you know, she's like, you know, why do I keep ending up with her? And you're like, you have to confront him and, you know, this creature, and you have to get it out of your head. And so as, you know, this final confrontation in the black box takes place, you know, no one fully emerges there. And this is very shocking to Thomas, you know, when he's, because, like, you know, mom, you told me he was gone, and you know that this is an empty vessel and stuff. A big fight ensues and such, but just as it seems like Thomas is about to kill Nolan for good and take control totally, Kayla and Gary bust in.
Ava.
Dang it.
Kayla's from the lie.
Ava and Gary bust in, and this just kind of leads Thomas to finally kind of grow a conscience for the first time.
So
in his
he
life.
Basically sacks himself and let Nolan take himself.
Yeah. He goes out into the never-never, I guess.
The sunken place.
You know, and Nolan ends up reemerging. And lo and behold, Ava gets her dad back.
He remembers their handshake.
Yeah, he remembers their handshake immediately again. Just really touching.
So it's a cute, happy ending until we see that Dr. Brooks, even though she's been fired, she's taken her equipment with her, and she's uploading Thomas's consciousness again into the black box. And she's obviously, you know, she's going to do it again.
And like she succeeds in it, and she's like, oh, Thomas. So again, like it looks like we got a happy ending because Nolan does get to be with his daughter, but alas, Thomas still is there. So you're right. Like this is definitely Black Mirror Dangers of Technology, but this one has a lot more of a horror bent to it just because of the manifestation of Nolan in the memories, which are very, very creepy. The sound design kind of reminded me of like Mama a little bit, the cracking of the bones and the way that he moves and stuff. I mean, it is pretty grotesque when you think about it.
It's creepy. Yeah, it's definitely creepy.
Yeah, but again, just wonderful performances all around. And, you know, and again, like this big danger, you know, like, you know, Dr. Brooks goes too far, you know, like to try and save her son, even when he might not look, he's probably not worth saving at this point.
But it's the same theme for her as the first one. How far would you go?
How far would you go to do that? And then, of course, the idea of, you know, family being the last thing you have, even when you don't have, you know, your proper brain function, like when Ava is taking care of Thomas Nolan, you know, Thomas/Nolan at the beginning. So just a really, really solid piece of filmmaking here. Really good performances all the way around. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed both of these films.
Yep. They were super good. Definitely recommend.
Yeah. So, all right. That's going to do it for this full disclosure review of Black Box and The Lie. Again, under the Welcome to Blumhouse, to the Blumhouse banner. There's two more films coming out in this series that will be released later this month, in the middle of the month. Next week. Yeah, from when you're hearing this. We will be back to review those two.
It would be this week.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. But those are Nocturne and Evil Eye. So those are the last two films in the Welcome to Blumhouse series. I based on these two, I can't wait to see what they're gonna do.
Yep. should be pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, again, we are in MonsterCast month. There are tons of shows coming out every single day. That's right. Every day you get a new episode of the Front Row Network here in MonsterCast. If you want to hear more from Sarah and I, we've been doing our MonsterCast horror film spotlights. We dropped Jeepers Creepers. Tomorrow you will be hearing our review of Hell House LLC, and then we'll be interviewing the director of that film in the same episode. You can also hear us on Are You Afraid of the Podcast, which we will be releasing in the middle of the month and the end of the month. But of course, if you want to know more from the Front Row Network, go to thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/front-row-network. Find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, The Front Row Network, and follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. Sarah, anything else before we sign off here?
No, you're very long-winded.
Yes, exactly. It's a big spiel, but I've memorized it. All right. Well, thank you again for listening to this full disclosure on the first part of the Welcome to Blumhouse series for The Front Row Network. I'm Jeremy Geckner.
I'm Sarah Beltusevich Geckner.
And we'll see you in the front row. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z.